Good morning. I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. We're here this morning with one of our restaurant reviewers, Rich Terapak, along with people from Copious Notes. We have Michael Melching and Curtis Hillard, who is joining us as well. Many restaurants offer taped music to accompany your dining experience, but at Copious Notes, you go a step further, offering live music on one level, fine dining on the other. The music runs the gamut, from what I understand, from jazz to bluegrass. The food somewhat reminiscent of New Orleans, according to our food reviewer. Curtis Hillard runs the kitchen. He's the chef. Michael Melching is the general manager. They're joining us this morning, along with Rich, to tell us more about Copious Notes. Now, do you call it Copious or Copious Notes?
Yeah, that's pretty good question. So Copious is the name of the restaurant and facility. We felt that the music venue needed a little bit more of a different identity. So it's referred to as Notes at Copious.
Ah, so it's a little bit in reverse of the way we presented it.
Well, that's okay, as long as you get there.
That's right.
We think of this as kind of a downtown club, a supper club in the old tradition, but you've kind of turned it on its ear.
Correct.
What was the concept for it?
You know, amazingly, we did not set out to do this. It kind of evolved into this.
Yes.
Yeah. So we started off as looking to develop a restaurant. The partners and I, Terry Turner, Bill Clark, Bob Breithaupt, and myself, we looked out to create this a restaurant, essentially, that might offer some music. And we found this really interesting building, this McGowan building, which is at 520 South High in the Brewery District. The building is a three-story, 21,000-square-foot facility.
Big building.
Very big. And as soon as we walked in, we started looking around and thought, this is an interesting space. And downstairs in particular, there was this bar called Clancy's back in the day. And it had this footprint and then just vibe about it that says, this is a music venue.
And you joined down when, Curtis?
I came along in May, right in May. I just came from State College, Pennsylvania, working at a hotel there. And these guys sought me out and told me about the concept, and I loved it. Comfort food is dear to my heart. I love to make it for myself, and with what these guys were offering, it was just a match made in heaven.
From what I read about you, you kind of learned to cook at home with your mom. Is that why comfort food comes first to mind?
Well, yeah, and I think what we do right now is cooking at home, but if a chef did it for you. So
what Marilyn's been looking for a while.
Okay, and, so I'm in love. Go on.
Yeah, so hello, how are you doing? Those beginnings were definitely things that contributed to what I do now. The love for just cooking for family. It's like we're doing that here at Copious. The people that come in and the way we have our atmosphere set up, you know, with how the tables are, they're not pretentious, no tablecloths, and we have area carpets down, and we're putting plants in and things like that. So, you know, it seems like you're at home, and we want to have that feel. No robotic service, you know, friendly service. I think that's our goal, and I think we've been achieving it.
Yeah, it's a very good-looking place. It's kind of contemporary, but comfortable. And it's good that you get out and walk around. We were there a couple of weeks ago, and you were kind of cruising the tables and asking people what they thought. And
that's contributed to a really good crew that I have. We've gotten some really good people that I can rely on to basically run the kitchen while I'm out talking to the guests. But it's very important to have that established so that I, as the chef, can get a barometer as to how well we're doing.
Absolutely.
Firsthand.
And the guests appreciate it, actually.
Yes, and they get to ask me
questions.
Chef
Hankey used to do that quite frequently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think it's important to have that contact with the guests. They can ask questions, and it feels a little bit more personal. So.
Now, you mentioned coming from Pennsylvania, but you've worked in any number of cities around the country.
Yes.
I'm sure that they've all been laboratories of sorts here and there. You've picked up different things in different places.
Yeah, I've been fortunate with being able to travel the country. I've done a lot of some seasonal work, which allowed me to be in different places of the country, you know, for the season. But at the same time, it also allows me to work with different types of people in different areas, too. and being able to manage different types of people because of different areas of the country. Because, you know, the relationships and of the chef and culinary people, professionals in California is a little different than Ohio, because Ohio is a meat and potatoes town. That's what people, you know, think. But in California,
we're trying
it's
to
a little
get over
trendy.
It. Yeah.
Right. So
as long as the meat is duck confit, we're okay.
Yes, but I've had a chance to travel. I had a chance to learn different types of cuisine and work with different types of people. And I've been fortunate. And I can take that group of experience and bring that to Copious. So I feel fortunate with that, yes.
We're talking with Chef Curtis Hillard and Michael Melching of Copious. And it's down in the Brewery District. Was it the building itself that you found that you really wanted, or did you want to be in the Brewery District specifically?
It's a combination of both. We looked around at some different spots, and then we really enjoyed that space. And then when you look at everything else that's going on down there, we look at the people that are moving down, the different apartment and condo places that are being built mm-hmm. down there, really it tells us that this whole area is coming back. You know, the downtown and the Brew District, German Village, all of it's coming back. People are coming down, spending more time down there.
There was a period of time, and Rich, you may be able to remember this better than I, kind of in the early 90s, mid-90s, when the Brewery District was really...
Party on the patio.
Yeah, it was
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
And then something happened, and it kind of fell out of favor. It just...
I think the short north and the excuse me, the development of condominiums and apartments in that area mm-hmm. brought more people to that area. It's also closer to the university, so that and it just swiped the people from the Brewery District.
Yeah, they were pretty competitive for a while. They were kind of equal, and then all of a sudden it just surged ahead, and the Brewery District kind of withdrew.
But it's coming back. You know, you've got Arapazo across the street.
Right.
You've always had Tony's. Right. You've got, you know, a couple of different good beer joints. You've got some party space in addition to yours. Two caterers has a facility down there. So I think there is getting to be a critical mass. And as we were talking about briefly before the show, you can get on the C bus if the short north is not your place, or if it's too crowded, and get right on down to this area.
Right, or if you live
for
in
free.
Or if you live in the short north, it's a great way to get down there too. I mean, it's just a wonderful service that that Columbus offers that some people still haven't heard about yet.
Well, speaking of service, I think our valet that we offer valet helps us a lot. Parking has always been an issue.
Sure.
For us to be able to offer that, I think people really believe
at a reasonable price.
At a reasonable price, yes.
There is limited parking, is there not?
We have limited parking in the back of our facility, yes.
And a garage across the street.
Oh. And you are close, I would think, to the court complex?
We're just on the other side of 71, so very close to that, close to other things that are downtown, Grange. So there's a lot of...
So you're getting some street traffic, say, at lunchtime?
You get some. It's not as much walkable... traffic as what you'll see in the short north, because short north has a lot more retail that just happens there. But people do get out.
I told him
nice
to
day.
Talk to the clerk of courts, and the jury could go there at lunchtime. It's only a block and a half, and they can spend their $20.
Yeah, and we do get a few lawyers that come across too.
Yeah, you don't want too many.
What about the third floor space?
So that's an event space. It can seat up to about 300 people.
So you could have a wedding reception?
Yep. We have several of them already booked. Holiday function, corporate functions. The space is really unique in that you can do a big function upstairs. We can do a smaller function downstairs in notes. We have a private room on the main floor that seats 20 people, a real long table in there. We can combine things in a way. You can come down, have an event upstairs, and maybe go listen to music after your event downstairs.
Curtis, I knew you told me earlier that you were going to be changing the menu, so whatever's online now might change. In a few days, what are you going to be featuring?
This is going to be starting Monday. Okay. Monday, we're starting lunch and dinner. We're going to be featuring meatballs with pasta. We're going to have locally sourced food. It's always been our focus. So we use American Kobe beef that's raised right here in Ohio, along with Berkshire pork to make our meatballs. We use Ohio City pasta from Cleveland, which is the local, more locally sourced to the dish. We also have What's the other couple of things we
have? You were doing short ribs. I thought we were going to be on.
Yes, we have short ribs.
I think that's going to be the real winner.
That is going to be the
winner. It's a short rib with a peppered Havarti mac and cheese.
And that's a local
peppered
Havarti.
My wife had that and loved it. And it was so large, we had to take it home and eat it for 2 days. It's a great portion.
It was a copious amount of food.
Yeah, copious amount.
It's substantial.
Is that part of the allure, is that you're getting a generous portion?
Now, we do have a section of the menu that has copious plates, so you can expect a little bit more with those. A lot of people have taken the word copious from our name and said, you know, well, it must be every plate that's huge and piled up. And that's not where we really focus on. We have a copious amount of things that go on at Copious.
Yes.
But you can't expect every plate to be just something where you can take food home every day. But we do have enough to fill you up. But we do have a section of the menu that says copious plates, and they're a little bit more substantial plates.
The shows, the performances downstairs, they're Thursday through Sunday. Is that correct?
Wednesday through Sunday. So Wednesday we have an open mic.
Okay.
And then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, we have a variety of different things that can go on. Like you mentioned, from jazz to bluegrass, we'll have some blues. We'll have some rock, some alternative stuff.
Occasionally bringing in some
we had
big
John
talent.
Popper a couple weeks ago. He was with Blues Travelers, two great shows from him.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Grace Kelly, who's a great jazz performer. She's on Stephen Colbert, Jeff Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of national talent as well. We really try to focus more on local things.
Sure.
Just part of our identity is local. But the variety is the main thing. I think people, you know, they think jazz club and they think just jazz, but we really try to steer away from that term of jazz club. You know, it's a music venue. The variety is the key.
Right, right. Bob, who is one of your partners, was executive director and it still is a member
Correct.
Of Columbus Jazz Arts. He's the drummer.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and he's the dean of music at Capital University.
Right.
Great guy. You know, proud to have him part of our team.
Yeah.
And this sounds labor-intensive. How many employees do you have?
Well, there's me and Curtis.
Yeah, I suspect you're just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah. I mean, there are several people that make this whole thing happen, but it's not really a huge group. What we try to do is move people around, you know, because, you know, we might be really busy in the music venue, not as busy in the dining room, so we can move people around that way. And the same thing with upstairs. So eventually we'll have to hire a lot more people, obviously, to handle all the business. But right now we just kind of move people around to fit everybody's needs.
And when the warmer weather
a patio outside
finally comes, you do have a patio.
Yeah, about a 30-seat patio outside. So it's part of our bar, so we serve happy hour out there too.
And what are the hours of happy hour?
4 to 7.
Okay.
You know, every day of the week.
So now tell me, you're open for lunch and dinner. Dinner 7 nights a week, right?
Correct.
Yes.
And then lunch 5 days a week.
And brunch on Saturday and Sunday. So brunch starts at 10.
So
Curtis
overworked?
That's a question for Curtis.
Well, sitting beside my boss, I'm absolutely fine. I love it. The hours are great. Well, actually, being a chef, you kind of sign on for that. So, and, you know, you love what you do, and it's not really work for me. So it's the passion behind it. So I love going to work every day. We have about 15 culinary staff. I think overall we probably have maybe about 40 50 people.
That's substantial.
We cross train a lot of the staff, and they really love it. You know, it gives them opportunity maybe not to have a second job, but if you're coming up in this industry and you want to learn a little bit more, if you're a hostess, like we have a hostess right now that's going through culinary school, she can host and she can work in the kitchen, and we love that, you know. So it's a really good group, tight group. It's a family.
Well, it sounds like if you get the right people and it's the right fit, everything's going to work very smoothly.
Right people, that's the key.
Right.
It's been a challenge, but we've evolved into a really tight group, so we're looking for more good people. So if you're interested, come to
Yeah, what are you doing later on today?
Sorry, a little job there. Yeah.
We're coming into the spring and summer, so we're gearing up for a really busy season. So.
Just wanted to mention, you do serve limited food in the performance area.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have a menu that's designed to be more shareable, so flatbreads, wings.
Get the sliders.
Yeah.
They're good.
Yeah, they're really good. Thank you.
Thank you both very much.
You're welcome.
Curtis Hillard and Michael Melching of Copious, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Copious is located at 520 South High Street. It's open for lunch and dinner 5 days a week, dinner 7 days a week, and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Thanks again.
Thank you all.
And we're back. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. I'm Marilyn Smith. Our panel of food reviewers joins us now, Rich Tarapak, along with his son, Rich, and Steve Stover, all of whom write for our blog, Chefs in the City, at WOSU.org. And we've had a bit of a rough transition here this morning, getting one group out and one group in. So while they're settling in, I'm going to throw a question to you immediately, Steve.
Oh, good.
You're kind of the historian at our table. Looking back through your list of historic restaurants, did the city ever boast a significant number of the kinds of venues that Copious is, these kind of music, fine dining venues?
Yes, but before my time. Tommy Heinrichs?
What's that, the Ice Age?
Yeah. Quill Pens and Mastodons.
Yeah, Tommy Heinrichs.
Heinrichs, yeah.
The Merrimore had
Danny Deeds.
Danny Deeds.
An entrepreneur or... And there were quite...
There was a one across the street from Koonings, Kennings, Keenings, and I can't remember the name of it. But anyway...
You can go on to less formal, great days of the Gloria out on Riverside and Trabue. It was an Italian restaurant and other stuff going on and music venue, because I remember we played there in the 60s. So the Ravens played there in the 60s.
And the Ravens?
Mm-hmm. Steve's band.
I was in a band.
I didn't know. Don't have their catalog?
I didn't know. But then
he was lead singer.
I didn't have the advantage of growing up here, and apparently your fame didn't travel as far as
semi-fame. But those were the days. But yes, we did have music venues. Obviously not to the degree of other famous music cities like New York and New Orleans, but back in the day, and probably from most of the 20th century.
Now, in a more recent vein, Yvonne Sarber had the Von Jazz Club up around Worthington.
I was just going to mention that other people have tried the concept recently. I think with that, it's more a matter of location. That was up at the Crosswoods area, which is, more of a business park. There are some apartments up there, but I don't know that it was the right location for a jazz venue.
The music was in the same venue as the food was served.
Right, exactly. It didn't separate, but, it's a unique concept that I think downtown would work a lot better. That space especially, it's large space, great acoustics. I think it was more built for that. Mm-hmm. So
seats 150, I asked. But the difference is the setting. Rich talked about how beautiful it is and how upscale it is. A lot of the music venues are downscale, and very, very casual. So it's nice to have a grown-up place where you can go, particularly in this day where fine dining is diminished.
And there are other ones that have tried it. They don't do it. It's not a nightly thing, but, Worthington Inn does jazz nights. The Refectory will have guest musicians in. But nobody's really made it their business model to do that particularly. Mm-hmm. But I think there is space for it, and especially down in the brewery district, especially with all the migration of baby boomers going downtown now.
But that's a good point. The Refectory probably has some kind of a music event or similar, maybe a wine event at least once a week.
Oh, yeah.
I just got an email from the Refectory yesterday about a jazz night that they were doing. Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of them. Mm-hmm. So,
Rich, you talked about how attractive the space is, and Chef Curtis Hillard, who was with us in the last segment, talked about adding plants and making it feel more like your home. Did it feel like that to you?
It's It's not home yet. they've got a lot of nice, nice art. Wooden tables,
which I think is going to switch out. Right?
Yeah, which will rotate. Wooden tabletops. I think putting the plants in. It looks like it could be a loft if it were off the ground. It's kind of that contemporary look. We didn't mention it. It has a very nice, very long bar. Must seat 20 people, and that's just to the right as you come in, and then you walk into a larger room. It's comfortable, but it is a little
but
more upscale.
It's not like L'Antibes was, where you feel like you're in an upscale.
No. Right. Well, since you're sitting Saturday night, Rich and Cindy and Mary and I are going to go to Copious.
Oh, good. It works.
So you haven't been there yet?
No, Cindy and I might be going this Saturday night. We're still deciding where to go.
Rich, there are two shows, in case you want to sneak out early. There's a show at 7:30, for which there is no charge, by the way. And then there's a show at 9, I believe. You can have dinner upstairs and go to the 9 o'clock or go to the 7:30 and have dinner upstairs after. So
sounds like the Terrapack business model. Go to the free show.
That's
yes, exactly right.
That, I was looking through good, the entertainers that they have lined up. And these shows are not particularly expensive, even when there is a charge.
No, it's a cover charge.
No,
$5 to $10.
The entrees are more than the tickets, which is great. And they've got some great bands. I saw Mojo Flow on there.
Yeah, Mojo is a kind of a regular, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of Columbus local groups that people know well. So, this Saturday, I believe it's the Hawkeyes, which is a southern rock band. I don't know. Wanted to check them out before we decide if we're going to go, but... Yeah, looks like a great venue, and I know
they're working on some national people. What was it? Terry Turner, the guy who really manages the music performance portion of it, was talking about Alison Krauss later in the summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you know when? No, I'm a huge fan.
I know.
Don't say it on the radio until I get tickets.
Mary.
But this sounds, as I said during the interview with the guys from Copious, that labor intensive. How difficult is this to sustain? I mean, they're using fresh ingredients. They have relationships with area farmers. There's the music end of it. 40 or 50 employees, which is substantial.
Yes, it is.
And I think we went last Saturday to the shows, and they've served downstairs in the music performance area. They've got the dining room, which has about 150, I think, and then a large reception space, and there were events going on in each of those locations. I don't know if they were doing it all out of the same kitchen or not, but it's got to be a challenge.
Yeah, I mean, to sustain the type of kitchen they're doing, they're going to have to become known for their food. I mean, the music will always be a draw, but to sustain that level of kitchen, they're going to have to get some diners in.
Well, it sounds like they're doing the right things, with the local sourcing and things like that.
Yeah, I believe so.
And it seems to me that Curtis Hillard has some serious credentials when it comes to cooking. He was at the Greenbrier, and he was with Chef Hanke.
Yeah.
There's a lot of those running around.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of
the proteges that survived.
Yeah. A lot of them at the Greenbrier that are Hanke proteges.
And I think he mentioned Pinehurst and a couple other clubs like that. So, I think he's got some real experience. But I think – I don't know if he's self-trained or not, but he talks about, learning at the hem of mom's gown kind of thing. And I think that's a lot of what he produces.
Okay. Is he from the South? Is it kind of New Orleans style? I think
he's from here.
Oh, he is? Okay.
Yeah, I think he might be.
But if he's worked at the Greenbrier and Hanke's, he's got to have credentials.
Yeah. And I think he did spend some time in New Orleans in there, so there's a
I know
little hint of.
I read the review you wrote on it, and it sounded kind of a New Orleans flair.
Yeah, well, they had some crab cake, mussels, kinds of a lot of shrimp. Maybe I can't recall if there's a shrimp grits or not, but that kind of thing reminded me of New Orleans, which fits in with the jazz setting.
And I hope they keep that braised short rib over macaroni on the menu after Monday. That I just saw a photo of it and started drooling.
Yeah. We're talking with Rich Terrapack, his son Rich, and Steve Stover, all of whom write for our blog, Chefs in the City at WOSU.org. One of the things I wanted to ask you, Rich, since you have been to Copious, does the music being performed in the lower level bleed through to the dining room?
Not when we couldn't pick it up when we were there. I think it's pretty good acoustics. So you can dine don't be worried about something drowning out the meal in the conversation. I thought the acoustics were good. We talk frequently about how some restaurants in town seem to make it really noisy. This is at the noise level of the Guildhouse, perhaps. It seems busy and active, but it's not deafening. And so it would. I was pleased that they aren't piping the music upstairs, because I think that would probably.
But yet,
drown out the conversation.
Most restaurants do have some kind of music in the background.
Yeah, and I quite frankly, I can't recall if they had any.
You could hear it at the refectory.
Nobody wants to be shouting across the dinner table.
Right.
You want to be able to have a normal conversation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Indeed.
Well, I hope those of you who are on your way to Copious have a good time.
They serve, by the way, I think they do the braised short ribs as tacos at lunchtime.
Oh, okay. So they do lunch as well?
They're lunch, too.
And brunch on the weekends. So
it's a full-service operation.
Absolutely.
Speaking of brunch, actually, I was going to say there's an event coming up for those brunch fanatics out there, like my wife, Cindy. There's a event coming up on April 14th at the Columbus Athenaeum, hosted by Crimson Cup and Columbus Underground, called the Best Bites Brunch.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and
they just did the pizza event in March.
And they're going with different themes. It benefits the Boys and Girls Club of Central Ohio.
Each time it's a different 501c3.
So it's going to be kind of brunch in the evening, and I think it's $30 a head, but they're going to have, I think, 18 or 20 different restaurants there doing their favorite brunch stuff, Cash Bar, and then Crimson Cup Coffee. So for any of you brunch fanatics out there.
But it's in the evening.
Yeah, it's in the evening. Yeah, 6 to 9 on April 14th.
So get that caffeinated Crimson Cup. It's really good stuff.
And
it's
Cash
local.
Bar as well.
And it's last call for the Ziggy Memorial Dinner that is being hosted by Columbus State Foundation at the Blackwell. It's tomorrow night, and it's
tell us
Chef
a little
David
about
Wolf.
The background of
Well, Ziggy, Ziggy Alsbach was a legendary chef in Columbus, and he had Ziggy's Continental, which is one of the first really
Riverside
upscale
Drive, right?
Continental restaurants. It was Riverside Drive near where the drive-in used to be, at Zollinger. And he also was instrumental in founding or at least growing the Chef Apprentice program at Columbus State. And when he passed away, suddenly he drowned a year ago. Some of his pals got together and they have an annual dinner to raise money for the Columbus State Foundation and the culinary program. And it's tomorrow night. And Chef David Wolf, who used to be at the Sheraton, and a lot of other great chefs are going to get together and fix a nice dinner in his memory. And so I just thought I'd give it a last minute plug, because it's a would be a fun evening.
292-8513 if you have any questions about food or restaurants. For our panel, Rich Tarapak, is Sunrich, and Steve Stover, all of whom, as I mentioned, write for our blog, Chefs in the City, at WOSU.org. Steve, you sent me a list of ideas of things that you were interested in talking about today.
Uh-huh.
Craft breweries on tap. There are now 160 in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
I think when we did a craft brew show just last year,
it was
75.
Ago.
Mary
or
called
something.
In. Remember, I talked
Mary
to Mary.
Mary McDonald.
Uh-huh. And the 160, 60 more in the planning stages, and 30 in Columbus.
So are we saturated now?
I apparently not.
I can't get to them all, and I love beer.
There are two new ones coming that were just announced last week. The Cleveland's Platform Brewing is going to – it's an old meatpacking plant near Columbus State, and they're going to have a roof garden and just, views of downtown and brew beer there. And then Keith Jackson, who is the chief brewer at Gordon Biersch and Columbus Brewing, is opening Combustion Brewing in Pickerington. And our friend Matthew Barbie from Rock Mill is trying to expand into Columbus. And there was the Juergens place, and there was some neighborhood.
Is that dead now?
I don't think it's dead, but he told me he's looking for another space to do the brew pub. And then he's thinking about doing a chef-driven restaurant in the Juergens site. But the other interesting thing is, so much of this, even Rich's favorite, Hoofhearted, they're all food. There's food aspects.
Well pronounced.
Food-driven things. And then the other piece of it is Craft Beer Week.
Yep.
May 13 to 21.
Oh,
it's ColumbusBeerWeek.com. Their special event is 6-1 Pour.
Oh.
on May 20th at Huntington
Park. They're punny.
That's going to be like 50 craft brewers from around the state of Ohio, and then I think Chipotle.
And to hell with the carb police, I'm going to go. Yeah. It's just too much fun.
And then the North beer. Market usually does a beer event every year, don't they?
Uh-huh.
I know they do the wine event.
They do Ohio wine, for sure.
I'm not sure if they do a beer event.
I think they've been doing
it. There's one at the convention center right across from North Market.
Well, with this many craft breweries, they're going to have to expand it to a larger...
The one at the convention center is the Beer Fest. That's more of a national and regionals. This is, I think, more Ohio-specific. Mm-hmm. And then as far... Yeah, and just as far as German Village goes, you mentioned Rock Mill looking for a place down there. Daily Growler, which is a craft brewery shop. They have locations in Powell and Arlington are also going to open one up in German
Village.
Got the
one on Fischinger?
Yeah, exactly. It's a terrific shop, and I think it's great. German Village might be able to get back to its roots a little bit. You know, ever since we lost Hosters down there, you know, it's not. I don't know that it's a. You know, we've got Columbus Brewing Company down there, but I don't know that it's appropriate to call it the brewery district anymore. Yeah. But if Matthew
only from a historical perspective, because it was that's the reason it was German Village,
right?
Yeah. I think it's probably the biggest thing on the food scene right now, and. But the important point is that almost all of them have some kind of a chef-driven food, which is really – it's not just chips and dip. It's really chef-driven.
And all three of us had the opportunity to hear Matthew Barbee from Rock Mill present some of his beers paired with food the other night. And you can just tell how excited he is about it. That he, mm-hmm. You know, he said it's his favorite thing to do is, you know, the pairing portion. So,
it's really sophisticated. I couldn't believe it.
Oh, it is. The beers are really sophisticated. And they so many different notes that can go with so many different types of food.
Does that kind of elevate it to a level that's not as attractive, you know, making it kind of snooty as opposed to, you know, the drink that everybody likes?
No, I think it expands the market a little bit. There's
room for both.
Yeah, I agree.
I think.
Yeah, you can still get Milwaukee, whatever it is. And,
I thought it was really interesting, the way he paired it.
Natty
with
Light.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure many people will continue to have their Pabst, yes. 292-8513, and Cody has joined us. Cody, you have a question. Go ahead.
Sure. I was calling in regards, I know that the James Beard Awards are coming up at the end of the month, mm-hmm. and I was wondering perhaps, I know that Copious and G. Michaels tend to be kind of that more chef-driven styled concept, and Jeff Rigsby, I think, was a semifinalist in 2012. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering perhaps if you had any critiques to the Columbus food scene as to why we don't see – I know Cleveland gets that sort of recognition. There are a couple of restaurants there that have that type of accreditation, but could you speak to anything about that?
We've had people nominated from Columbus.
Kent Rigsby,
you know, it's a very difficult contest to win. Jonathan Sawyer was the fellow out of Cleveland. I think it was Greenhouse Tavern. Is that right?
He's the new one, right?
Yeah. But we've had, I think, was Richard Blondin once nominated for that?
I think he was a nominee.
And then I know Kent Rigsby was a nominee. Yeah. So we've had some people on the list.
We had Bill Glover on not too long ago, and he was doing a James Beard event.
Right.
At the actual James Beard house in New York City. Yeah.
Well, John Christensen was the one who was the voter for Columbus for many years. And so he was careful to ensure that there were people nominated. But, you know, one of the things is that there was a rumor, in fact, published reports that Jonathan Sawyer of the Greenhouse Tavern was going to open in Columbus. So I actually communicated with his wife last week and said, you know, there was a rumor it was going to be in Italian. And she said, we love Columbus. We'd like to be in Columbus. It didn't work out. I don't know, the way she described it is it didn't work out this time in negotiations with a landlord. So I'm hoping we can, if some of the food folks pursue it a little bit, we can get something here, because with losing all of these star chefs over the last 6 years, Hanky Rosendale, Kent Rigsby, and
Kent isn't completely lost.
No, and neither is Matthew Litzinger, Lantee, but it would be nice to have somebody of that here. Bring them here if we can't get our folks.
Well, you know, these things are cyclical. Right now, that kind of mid-level, you know, casual, but, you know, tasty dining is fashionable. You know, eventually the white linen tablecloths will come back.
Oh, please.
We'll get those types of, you know.
Well, I think some of it, too, is, you know, the popularity of that area from the Cap to Fifth Avenue is the landlords are getting extraordinary rents for that. And I think most of the folks coming to town look at that area as the place to be. That's the reason I think it'd be nice to see some more on the south side of High Street, where we're getting all the new population.
We need to take a quick break here. We'll be back. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. And we're back. I'm Marilyn Smith. This is All Sides Weekend, Chefs in the City. We're talking with food reviewers Rich Terapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover, all of whom write for our blog, Chefs in the City at WOSU.org. We were talking during the break, and we actually covered this as a news story this week, that a private equity company has partnered up with Jenny's, one of our local favorite ice cream entrepreneurs. What does this mean?
I think Rich might have pointed this out. They've grown so, despite the issues with the Listeria last year, and finding other production facilities. You know, they've got shops from California to the Carolinas, I think is what the line is. And Steve mentioned one in Nashville. Rich has friends who
friends with in L.A., you know, managed to find Jenny's at Whole Foods out there. So I think they're getting to a certain scale now where, you know, sometimes you need a capital injection to help you, you know, continue along that growth path. And
so what is it actually – what does it mean, though?
Basically it means you sell part of your company to this private equity company, essentially.
So they're not going public.
It's similar to going public in that you're needing to raise money. But usually the ownership, you know, will take some of their own cash out of the company and sell a piece to the private equity firms that have the relationships and the capital to help grow across the country. And I think their goal is to be in, you know, every Whole Foods and every Trader Joe's and place like that around the country.
So we've seen Jenny's kind of farm out production to the chocolate shop in Wisconsin and a dairy in Orville, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Is that a permanent solution? Smith Dairy, you're in.
Well, I think as far as distribution goes, having some out-of-state production areas is probably pretty important.
Yeah, I mean, shipping that much ice cream to the West Coast from Ohio would be that's not practical or, business savvy. Yeah. Every company does that. I mean, you know, you provide, you know, the materials, the suppliers, the recipes, and, you know, people put it together for you.
The issue is quality control.
Right, exactly.
Can Jenny get around and visit all these places and make sure they're
make sure
right.
the product the salty is consistent.
Caramel is salty
exactly.
Yeah.
Well, except, of course, you know, Jenny's – I don't know Jenny per se. I do remember when she had a place in the North Market, and I think it was called Ice Cream.
Mm-hmm.
And
failed. The first operation in the North Market failed.
Which is often the best teacher.
Yeah. And I interviewed her for City Scene magazine at that time, right in between. And she was just opening again. And she said that was the seminal event in her career, was having that failure and then knowing how to start over again. I think I don't know if it was a problem with a partner, but she had a partner at that time. And bang.
But I think, you know, one of the cachet of this ice cream has always been her.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's not actually physically there to oversee a kitchen in Wisconsin, is that going to hurt? It doesn't matter at this point.
Well, you know, perhaps she has trained enough people to be as particular about the product as she is. That would be the way to go. One of the things you worry about when you bring these people in is that some folks don't know anything about ice cream, but they have money. Oh. And they might decide they want some, you know, red licorice ice cream. Yeah.
Well, on her blog, she said she had been in negotiations with this particular firm. I think it's out of Boston. For more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. So presumably during that time, they came to know her and she came to know them pretty well.
And she's pretty smart. I mean, the way they handled their problem, I thought was A+. So
absolutely.
They know what they're doing. So hopefully.
But yeah, it's all about.
This will give them the chance to really go to the next level.
Quality control and just, you know, making sure that the product, you know, keeps its high standards. You know, they keep using all that, you know, butter fat and, you know.
That's the key.
Yeah.
It's a percentage.
It is. It's a percentage. You don't
think? Theirs is relatively low. They're sort of like gelato. When we the double chocolate or the
I
dark
don't believe
chocolate.
It.
Darkest chocolate.
Maybe some of their.
And she said the it's whole milk. I think in that recipe, it's whole milk and not heavy cream.
Hmm.
And the calories, I think the graters on the main are higher calories. It's 300 to 330 a scoop for graters.
And oh, don't ruin the day.
In fact, I'm going to have some for lunch. Ice cream's not just for dessert anymore.
292-8513 if you have questions for our panelists. We did mention there is a craft beer week coming up May 13th through the 21st. What local breweries are we going to see there?
We'll see.
We're going from
Homestead there. That's out of Heath.
Seventh Son.
Seventh Son has really taken off.
Four String.
What's the one near the airport? Actual?
Actual Brewing Company. And then you know, you've got your classics
downtown,
like Elevator, I'm sure will be there.
Columbus
Brewing Company, Barley's. I mean, there's almost too many to keep up with. I have trouble trying them all. Thankfully, I've got a beer shop down the street that I can at least, you know, try the products they deliver out. But there's more than we can handle, which is a good thing.
It's heaven.
But your question is a good one.
I mean, I've been drinking, you know, hoppy, you know.
You don't want to stop after.
No, for a long time. I mean, back when it was just Sierra Nevada. I mean, I've never liked light beer at all. You know, maybe a Czech Pilsner or something. But other than that, you know, I drink heavy beers. And so, yeah, now there's.
And these are all pretty hoppy.
Yeah, exactly. And some of them are too hoppy. I mean, some of them do get carried away. And, yeah, they kind of, it's almost like a, you know, a match, you know, who can make the hoppiest beer. And,
That's why there's a hops shortage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
But Marilyn, I think your point is a good one. I mean, how many can we sustain? And in central Ohio, the I think Franklin County and the six or seven surrounding counties, there are 30. So,
Well, I'm sure that the superior ones, as always, will rise to the top and the others, you know, will fall away. If you don't get the customers and you don't get the following that you need.
Well, and I think one of the reasons we're seeing so much in Columbus is we've got a lot of students, master's students.
It's a younger population.
Yeah,
universities, you know, multiple universities. It's just, you know, it's tailored to, you know, the folks who drink.
Right. That's the reason the people from Marengo came here with hoof-hearted.
Say that again.
292-8513. We're talking with Rich Tarapak, his son Rich, and Steve Stover about food. And one of the things that we should probably mention, because we had this chef on this program, Till Dynamic Fare, a.k.a. Dragonfly, and Izzy and Moe's, which has only been open for about a year
or a little more,
are going away. And it's really too bad. They're in a terrific neighborhood location. And I think that this husband and wife team have worked very, very hard just to make this place what it is.
It dates back to the Dragonfly, which was
the first real vegan.
Vegetarian vegan restaurant. But it was not grass clippings and sawdust. He's an excellent chef by any standard. And Dragonfly was in Christensen's top 10 at the Dispatch for
years.
10 years or more. Yeah. Then he, for whatever reason, decided to move to the Till with adding meat. And then this fabulous little tiny deli, like there are no seats basically, but he makes his own corned beef and his own bagels. And
we should mention it's Magdiel
Walmart, right?
Whose name I always have a little trouble with, as does everyone.
He's an incredibly talented chef who does, you know, incredibly creative things and doesn't follow the trends, you know, that most people are doing. It's really kind of groundbreaking stuff. From my understanding, they're just simply relocating, actually.
They're moving to Michigan.
So it's a loss for the community, but, you know, hopefully – I don't know that anyone like him will be able to step up in the place.
Yeah, because he was doing – at least at Izzy and Moe's, he was doing most of that stuff himself.
Right.
Himself.
Yeah.
And it was very labor-intensive and very – but it was just – it's a real loss.
Has it actually closed, or can we still get there?
I don't know. That's a good point.
Be a good lunch destination.
Yeah. Like maybe because until their place is ready, they may not move. Like Eddie George's is going to stay open until their new place over where the Buckeye Hall of Fame is.
I can't believe they're leaving High Street, though. It's
probably gotten expensive.
Oh, I'd be right.
I was surprised. They were one of the first,
you know, the first real draws down there when that whole renovation of High Street started to come about.
The Gateway,
excuse me. Yeah, and now, I mean, You know, you look at some of the retailers down there. You know, that's
a lot
a
of
tough
them
place.
Have had to move out.
Oh yeah, that's a tough place for a bar basically
to
survive.
Boy, is it always crowded.
Well, in football season.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true.
I don't think that's year round like that. So
okay,
it's probably
so let's
a smart
go
move
back
for
to
them.
The beginning. Eddie George's is moving out of the Gateway
to the Buckeye Hall of Fame cafe space.
Grandview Yard.
They
that
are
huge
closed.
Space.
They. Their contract with Ohio State expired, so they could no longer what I understand.
Like license the
could
brand.
No longer be the Buckeye Hall of Fame, and so they closed, and I believe that Eddie George is taking off that.
Ohio State needed $20 million now. Sorry, I guess we're...
Never mind.
Okay. 292-8513.
This is WOSU.
If you'd like to join the conversation.
I love the Buckeyes.
So this was the Buckeye Hall of Fame that was in... on High Street, or on, no. Sorry, on Olentangy.
It's where the High Line.
Exactly.
And then they tore that down.
Between Vic Village and Grandview.
And it was a different owner. The guy that founded the Buckeye Hall of Fame, I can't remember his name, but he was a burly guy, and he was an entrepreneur, and he was also thinking about doing a same kind of thing in other campus towns, Ann Arbor, University of Alabama. But then it evolved over time, and I don't believe this is the same group that did it, but they took the concept. They have Archie's Heisman Trophy and other kinds of
Buckeye memorabilia
and a little shop and stuff like that.
Where does all that go?
Well, I guess somebody
else. I'm sure it'll find a home.
Has to buy the idea
from
Ohio State.
Yeah, I think it all goes with the license.
So it was doing okay though in the Grandview Yard.
Oh yeah,
I think so.
It's a hopping
area.
Yeah. Especially during football and basketball games and stuff like that, because it's very convenient to the stadium and the shop.
And one of your notes, Steve, Cameron Mitchell has opened a new place on Grandview Avenue.
We're going tonight. It is a new concept from Cameron Mitchell. I think it's his 14th.
Steakhouse, right?
It's a neighborhood steakhouse. It's in the Panera location on Grandview Avenue, right north of...
Spaggio.
Yeah. And it's a neighborhood concept and a very sort of casual steakhouse. Some people have compared it to the Pine Club, which I can't believe. Some people have compared it to the Top. I can't believe.
No, I don't buy
it's
that.
Probably a little more upscale than that. But it seats 135. They're going to have a patio on Grandview Avenue, which is interesting.
And the Pine Club and the Top can't be replicated either. And especially,
I agree.
You know, Cameron Mitchell's places are fantastic
and
looking, but it's a totally different concept.
I'm not putting that in the blog.
But Cameron does a good job of finding out what's popular.
Restaurants are beautiful.
Yeah.
The other piece is that they must be confident in the concept because they're planning another one in Dublin next year. I just learned that this week, that he's planning another one already. I hope that it creates synergy with Spaggio. Avenue has been jammed, too.
Yeah.
It's been
–
and
now
maybe
they just got to find a place for everyone to park.
That is the biggest issue. They're sort of – it looks like they're sharing valet parking, which I think is a nice – I don't know if it
– Well, what
it
they should
like
all do is go to St. Christopher.
Yeah.
And negotiate for that parking lot, which is probably not used that much at night.
Yeah. Except for those of us who sneak in. I just say I'm going to 8:30 Mass early.
And I wanted to mention, too, a new location for my favorite hot dog place in the city, Daredevil Dogs.
Oh, great.
They're doing
great
a new pop-up location out in the Hilliard Sports Club, which is kind of Roberts and Hilliard Rome and Roberts Road.
That's
going to be open just in the evening at first and then maybe during the daytime. And then I'm also super excited. They have a food truck that goes around town. They're always looking for new locations. And they got in touch with the owners of the Bexley Coffee Shop over on North Cassidy. And they're going to be setting up every Wednesday starting April 13th in the evening from 5
Daredevil?
To 9. Daredevil Dogs.
Daredevil.
Where's the original? Really high-end.
On North High Street.
Really
high-end
hot dogs.
Yeah,
you know.
Okay.
Buttered buns, toasted. I mean, they are the perfectly constructed hot dog. I absolutely love them.
And they take a great deal of care. I mean, they cook them sous vide.
I know. They're
a hot dog.
I mean, nothing against Dirty Franks, but I think these are on a different level.
Yeah. Gosh, that's
so I'm really excited about that.
Again, is in a bag and boiling water.
Yeah, it's a bag that's been sealed up, all the air's removed, and it cooks very slowly, so it gets all the juices gone. And I think they do maybe brown them up a little bit afterward, but it's how they do that and produce them in numbers, I don't know.
And then there's another new hot dog place
Rippers.
On campus, Rippers.
Yeah, it's a New Jersey concept. Anyone from New Jersey knows that they deep fry them, actually, and the hot dog rips. So,
that's opening up my campus.
Miriam recently from Columbus Underground recently wrote a review. Sounded pretty good. I'm looking forward to trying them. I can't imagine I'll like them anywhere as much as Daredevil Dogs. But
where are they on campus?
I believe it's near the Gateway, if I'm not mistaken.
It's close to Daredevil.
Or University District.
Where does Daredevil get their hot? Are they Chicago?
I'm not sure where they get their dogs.
Too much fun. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Rich Terapak and his son, Rich, Steve Stover. Wallwright for Columbus Chefs in the City at our website, wosu.org. I'm Marilyn Smith. We'll do this again next month. Thanks so much.